And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? Welcome in to the Hold That podcast. It is Monday. It is immediately following the shocking LSU Tiger loss to the Missouri Tigers. It is Tell the Truth Monday in our purple and gold vernacular. And thus, what we will do on today's show is tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. As ugly and as seasonably appropriate as that truth may be. That's right, it's around Halloween time. And if you're an LSU fan, you will not find anything more spooky or terrifying than the defensive performances that you have seen two out of the 3 weeks of this season. I'm your host, T.Bob Hebert, host off the bench. It's a show on 104.5 ESPN, joined by my co-host, Brody Miller, who writes The Athletic. Brody, what's up?
Not too much, man. Before we get to all the bad stuff we're going to say about LSU, I just want to say I'm a little disappointed because this like was going to be my podcast. This was going to be my moment. Texas A&M beat Florida. You know, yeah. I was going to finally be able to be like, hey, Texas A&M's pretty good, guys. I told you, you know, it was going to be a nice little thing for me. And then and now we can't talk about anything other than basically what happened to LSU's defense Saturday. So thanks a lot, LSU defense.
Yeah, I will say this because we're going to criticize Bo Pelini quite a bit today. Takes have been Bo Pelini-esque, as I think everything that I said Saturday went wrong. Said LSU was the mortal lock of the century. I said Texas would win. I said Texas A&M wouldn't be close by the end of the game. I said Tennessee couldn't hang with Georgia, and I guess that kind of ended up coming true, but even then they had like a bit more success than I thought they would. I talked a lot of shit about Stetson Bennett, only for him to go and have a great game. Yeah. So yeah, basically everything that I've said about college football over the last week and has been wrong in terms of prediction.
So are we going to spin that as people should not listen to you anymore, or should we say you're due? Like, you got all your bad picks out. Now it's going to revert back to the mean. You're going to go 100%.
No, I would say don't judge me by my predictions because predictions don't matter anyway, right? Like, and everybody remembers when they get it right. They ignore when they get it wrong. It is what it is. Like, what I will say is listen to the critiques that I have given you and then answer me whether or not, for the most part, those have come true. Now, obviously, after the Vanderbilt game, I was way off on this defense. But as we'll get into, and if you heard the show this morning, a lot of what I said was immediately echoed by Ogeron and the staff in his press conference on this Monday. After game one, when everybody was panicking on Brennan, I said, look, man, what I saw wasn't that bad. Let's calm down, give him a chance. He's been really good, even though the offense definitely has stuff to fix. So, no, I mean, look, prediction is one thing. But I do feel confident in my ability to analyze film and to see what's wrong. And I spent 4 hours with this game last night, and it was a miserable 4 hours that I absolutely hated, but it had to be done. So I think this is how I want to handle it, Brody. I have, I've talked about this so much, and I know where I start, so I want to see where you start, and then I'll just kind of rebound off of you and see where this goes. By the way, subscribe to The Athletic. TheAthletic.com/holdthatpodcast. Great sign-up deal. Is the dollar a month deal still going on? If it's not that, it's 40% off. So either way. Okay, so it still is a dollar a month right now. TheAthletic.com/holdthatpodcast. And while you're on The Athletic, check out Football and Grits, SEC podcast. Okay, Brody, where do you start with LSU's shocking loss to the 1-2 Missouri Tigers?
I think you have to simply start with the man in charge. You have to start with Bo Pelini. I think that's where every discussion has to come from, because we can talk about the players who look bad. We can talk about, you know, all the things that went wrong in that entire game or the goal line or anything on that. But you have to start with Bo Pelini was the guy who just got paid $2.3 million to be LSU's defensive coordinator. And more than that, Ed Orgeron had just won a national championship. His stock will never have been higher. He could have hired, you would assume, just about anyone in the country to some extent. Yeah. And he had this big checkbook, and he sought out Bo Pelini. He went, he was like, this is my guy. He was going for him back in December when Dave Aranda was kind of flirting with another job. So, and that's the result you get. And listen, I mean, we... On this show, I'm one of the culprits. I'm one of the guys, and I think you are too. Of we thought this defense had a chance to be really good because we like the talent, you know. And I but we threw this caveat on every single one of those things we said, and I believe the things I said. To be clear, I thought they were going to be good, and I'll own it. But we threw this one caveat every time, and I said, "Listen, I think it's going to be good." But Bo Pelini hasn't coached FBS football in 7 years. He hasn't coached in the SEC in 13 years. There is that risk. There is that chance.
Yeah.
And I'm at a point now, three games in, two bloodbaths in against not particularly good teams. I hate to be dramatic with things, but the game might have passed him by.
The game looks like it's passed him by. I mean, that looks obvious.
It very much does. I mean, that was an all-around failure. It was a failure through two of these three games in how to defend modern offenses. It was a failure in communication, just having a team that looks like it's prepared. It was a failure in effort. It was a failure in adjusting. I mean, it was a – I don't think, aside from, like, the pass rush, I guess, I don't think there's a single thing you can point to that say that, like, they are in the right direction right now.
No, it's unthinkable. You're sitting here 1-2. And how about this? The opponents you've played are combined 2-9, with the only two wins coming directly against you. Or 2-7, excuse me. They're combined 2-7, and the two wins come directly against you. The wilder part is you sit here at 1-2, having lost to two other bad 1-2 teams, despite leading the SEC and being third in the nation in turnover margin, despite being top 10 in terms of penalty discipline, in terms of calls against you. I mean, those are two statistics, the turnover especially, where that is truly unthinkable. And in my opinion, it's truly bizarre. And so you have to ask yourself, how in the world did we arrive here? And like, the only answer is because the defense has been bizarrely and unthinkably bad. Like, don't get me wrong, there are definite personnel issues on this team. I mean, we when things are going this historically badly, everybody has a piece in it. Absolutely. But ultimately, when it comes to personnel issues, it's a coach's job to mitigate those issues. It seems like right now, Bo Pelini is not mitigating anything. In fact, it looks like he's exacerbating the personnel issues. And my guy Alex Anderson in the YouTube chat in our show this morning had a good point where it's like, you know, because some people are like, look, I mean, so-and-so didn't know what to do. That's not on the coach. Well, when everybody doesn't know what to do, like when every kid in the class fails the test, at what point is it the teacher's fault? Right? Like, at what point were the kids not taught the material? And when I watched this film, I wrote this down halfway through the first quarter, and not only did it stay true, but it just continued to get worse and worse. I have never in my life seen a defense that looked as confused as what I saw in this Missouri film. I mean, the Mizzou pre-snap movement, you would have thought that LSU was trying to solve one of life's greatest enigmas. And if you're wondering why the defense looks so slow, mental confusion leads to slow play. Why are Damone Clark and Jabril Cox catching blocks 5 yards down the field, refusing to hit a hole? Because they don't know what to do. They don't know what they're trying to figure out where everybody is supposed to line up. And look, I am not by no means my defensive scheme expert, okay? But this is my view on what is going on. I think very clearly in the past, we've described Dave Aranda's defense as kind of an amorphous blob, right? This kind of base defense that's very adaptable. It can work in a ton of different situations. So you didn't have to be very you didn't have to try to match shift for shift with the offense. This Bo Pelini defense not only seems overly complicated, if just the general sense of confusion is in the indicator, but it looks like every single person has a very specific assignment that switches based on like the smallest is this the smallest emotions. Mm-hmm. And so I think Drinkwitz understood this, and it perfectly goes with what he wants to do offensively anyway. And all of a sudden, he knows if he just throws in a little window dressing, a couple guys moving here and there, LSU is constantly, and then a dash of tempo added on top, just snapping it pretty quick, getting down the line nicely. LSU's defense, I mean, Brody, it was almost every single play, and I'm not exaggerating. It was almost every play. You had at least one guy not set when the ball was snapped or still talking to someone when the ball was snapped. It was unbelievable. It just did not look like a team that was prepared for anything that LSU had brought to the table. And so I mean, the linebacking play, and that's the worst part of it. And that is Bo Pelini's position group on top of the defense as a whole. I mean, I've never seen linebackers play so passive. Never got within five yards of line of scrimmage after the ball was snapped. I mean, catching blocks 5 yards deep. It's shocking. It truly is shocking at how bad it is. And now it's having it's just spawning all of these incredibly awkward and very real conversations that you would have never thought that you would have had just long ago. Like, do you have to think about firing him after year one? Yeah. Is LSU even going to be able to pull off 5-5 this season? Is this such a disaster? How do you recruit to this defense? Like, are you going to end up affecting recruiting? I mean, the knock-on effect of this failure is it's potentially huge. I mean, that's where they got to get the ship righted fast. But, I mean, look at this. You haven't even played a good offense yet.
Nope.
That's the craziest thing. Mississippi State, KJ Costello in the other two games combined has thrown for like 500 yards, one touchdown, and like seven picks. Basilek, before this, his second ever start, missing three of his top five receivers. Basilek, I think, had completed like, I think he threw for like 200 yards and no touchdowns and one pick. And then he comes out and does you like he just did you. I mean, I just never have seen it. So it's just it's unfathomable about how bad this could become if something doesn't improve. Because I mean, Ole Miss's offense looks incredible. Alabama's looks incredible. Florida's. I'm at the point. LSU needs to adopt the Lane Kiffin mindset, which is like Lane Kiffin operates under the assumption that his defense is going to give up 7 points every single time. And that's incredibly freeing in a way, right? You can be more risky. You can go for it on fourth down. You can do that onside kick and not really give a damn because what's the difference if they score from the 50 or score from the 25? Right? I mean, it's the same thing in the end. It's a touchdown either way. Like, that's how bad this LSU defense is right now. It's inexcusable. It's inexplicable. And it speaks to so many. I mean, the pride, the hubris. Where was the game plan against Mississippi State? I mean, what did Kentucky do to hold them to 2 points? What did Arkansas do to hold them to 14 points? Exactly what Chris Peterson and Washington State and everybody else has ever done that had success against them. Rush 3, drop 8. But LSU, thinking they were better than that, refused to put that in. And look at what happened. And then again, they looked like they had no idea what Missouri was doing. Look what happened. So it's a lack of preparedness. It's a failure in the main thing that a coach needs to do in a scheme, which is communicate responsibility to the player. And then it's a failure in in-game adjustments. And then you combine that with the mass exodus of talent and the personnel problems, and you have the worst LSU defense ever, points-wise, through three games, despite the fact that you have a game mixed in there where you only gave up 7.
And first off, beautifully done. I enjoyed every second of that. You nailed it. And there's some things I want to ask you follow-ups on. But yeah, I mean, you use the word hubris, and that is the right word. Because, I mean, I've spent a lot of this whole year talking to people who from Nebraska or people who played for him or coached with him and all these things. And yeah, a thing you really hear from people very commonly is Bo Pelini is a very smart coach, but he is a lot of hubris. You know, he is somebody who can be very stubborn and bullheaded and just, you know, he won't pivot. And if you tell it, it's us against the world if you kind of question him and those kind of things. And also, I mean, to some extent, thank God he doesn't speak to the media, because, I mean, another thing I've gathered is that when, like, everyone acts like it's his fault, he's going to get even more dug in and angry about it and all those things. So that's its own thing. But, you know, you talk – it's
– Well, there's no hiding. I mean, there is no hiding from this. Like, let's be clear. Like, I mean, that's the thing. I love LSU, and this is part that I hate because, like, you know, I have relationships with people. I played for Pelini. Like, I want – to be nice, but I have to be objective, and this is just so. I mean, what you're seeing on film is inexcusable. You are paid $2.3 million.
Yep, and you know the funny thing is, so much of this offseason, the thing that was getting the most, like that O was the most excited about, right? The thing he was selling was that it was, you know, simpler, that they were getting away. I mean, the common like knock you would hear kind of on background was that like Dave Aranda's scheme was a little too complicated for some of the guys, and you know sometimes he was trying to, you know, be a little too smart, and some of the guys were a little, you know, weren't really getting it. And now you are literally standing here on your Monday press conference, and Ogeron's number one thing that he is like adamantly saying is, we're gonna simplify. We're gonna, you know, it's way too complicated. We are gonna, and he was like, I can promise you, we are gonna be simpler from now on. That is the number one thing that like is the issue. That is just,
and that's why it's like, so nobody come at me and or come at us or whoever and tell me that I'm wrong or being overly critical, because that is exactly what the film showed, which I was actually very happy to see O come out and like address that head on, because it is 100% on the coach's fault. It's a defense that is so unbelievably confused. Nobody knows what to do. And I mean, at least like the first step to fixing a problem is identifying it. So that gives me some modicum of hope that something can be salvaged. Like, you don't even be average, be below average. Just don't be historically bad.
And you're 3-0 if you're below average, by the way.
Yeah, that defense 3-0 is even, if you're like, below average.
Even
think about
just
that.
Like, if it's even 10th best in the SEC or something like that, you're 3-0, and this whole season looks different. So that's the thing. This is a new level of bad. And this is where I want to circle back and ask you some questions, because, I mean, yeah, I rewatched the game too, but you know football better than me. And the things I'm noticing are, yeah, like, you know, Jabril Cox.
Oh, by
Cox
the way, before we do this, just real quick. So just to inform your questions, did this change anything? I did. I broke down all the failed 3rd and 10s. And I charted, at least to my count, every 10-plus yard play for Missouri. And they had 19 of them by my count, and 8 plays of 20 yards or more.
Yes. No, first off, beautiful. I mean, yeah, I'm looking at some advanced stats right now. LSU now ranks 70th in the entire country in explosiveness allowed, but also 61st in the country in success rate allowed. So teams are able to both move the ball when they want and move it for big gains. So that's a problem. But no, I want to ask you, because I mean, I watched the game, right? And you know, you notice things like Jabril Cox passes the receiver over to Damone Clark, but Damone Clark's way behind on it. Or you notice, you know, Todd Harris and Eli Ricks both think the other person has the receiver. You know, stuff like that. So, and you know, you clearly, you know, dove into this deeper than me, and you said that it's a defense that each person has one job, but then it can change, right? So walk me through what you saw there that points that out, that like that does make it seem too complicated.
Well, so that's the thing, is that how you can tell that it's too complicated is, okay, first and foremost, the first major red flags are people set at the snap. And like I said, the defense was never settled. There were so many plays where you had 1, 2, 3, 4 guys who had either just a millisecond before gotten in their stance, were taking their stance when the ball snapped, or weren't set at all. You also look for like hand motions, right? Last second communication. And if you watch the movement from Mizzou pre-snap and then watch LSU try to respond on the defensive side of the ball. It's guys like pushing each other and like frantically like pointing to guys like, you there. Like, okay, the Eli Ricks, Todd Harris is a perfect example. Right before the snap, what do they both do? As the ball is snapped, what are they doing? They're pointing to each other. So they're both like trying to figure out like, okay, who do you have? Like you have, and then what do you know? The ball snapped, no communication. I guess Ricks thought they were in some sort of zone. I'm guessing that's who screwed that up, because Pelini then, was yelling at him on the sideline. Looks like they should have been a man. And next thing you know, it's just another busted assignment, a touchdown over the top. So as far as knowing the guys didn't know what to do, I think those are your first major red flags, but there's also lesser things that you can look at. And that goes to the general passivity, if that's a word, of the defense. Like we were talking about with the linebackers, right? Why are they so slow? Why are they playing so passive? Why aren't these holes being filled? Like why are these cutback lanes so wide open? And it's because everybody is, like I said, mental confusion equates to slow play. And so when you see an LSU defense, it looks very slow and very reactive, and you know that the talent on that defense is better than that, well, then my explanation for that is that everybody's just thinking too much. Nobody is able to take advantage of their raw natural athletic athleticism because it's being blocked by just mental processing. And so I guess if I had to, if you ask me for the things, and then there's also a ton of situations where it looks like half the team's like playing man and then half the team's playing zone. And then of course that too leads to busted coverages. And I see why they don't play zone. They're horrible at it. They're truly horrible at it. Which, like, did you not install it till after Mississippi State killed you? That seems crazy to me. I mean, I get,
and that doesn't seem accurate because he said they're going to see more zone.
Yeah. So I mean, it's like Alex on the chat said, it's like watching a lot of kids just fail this test, and at a certain point, it's like, I mean, it's not really on the kids, like. What is being taught them? Like the golden standard, we've talked about this in the Hold That podcast, for our very loyal listeners, maybe gone back way long ago. But the golden standard for a coach is, can you make things look complex while making the communication of your responsibility within that scheme easy to understand, right? The great minds do this. I would say that you're seeing this with Lane Kiffin and that offense at Ole Miss. It's an offense that looks like it has a ton of moving parts, but there's not a lot of MAs there. The Dave Aranda defense was the same way. Looked very complicated and multiple, but it seemed like everybody always knew, for the most part, what they were supposed to do. Bo Pelini is not just struggling in that department. There is an utter failure. Nobody understands what their responsibilities are. And the results speak for themselves. I mean, just the two bad offenses have made you statistically the worst defense in the SEC, and now you still got to deal with Florida. You got to deal with Ole Miss. You got to deal with A&M. You got to deal with Alabama. I mean, it could get truly brutal.
And you know, one last thing before we kind of start moving on to, like, what now is...
No, you can keep asking me. Keep asking me. Whatever you want.
No. I was going to say, so, I mean, another thing Ogeron said today was really interesting. Because what surprised me, a lot of the stuff that we saw, the stuff that you just broke down, is stuff that doesn't shock me anymore because we were used to it these first 2 weeks. But, you know, it's still alarming. But the part that, like, was genuinely leaving me surprised was what the defensive line did. And I think a lot of that was the confusion stuff we were talking about. And a lot of that was the misdirection running schemes and just getting them out of touch. But... They were just getting bullied a little bit. I think some of that was...
I mean, they were just getting bullied, yes. And the D-line got blown up, and I don't know if that is a function of the confusion, but they got blown the hell
up. And Ogeron was asked about that today, and he said... This was really interesting. He's saying we might need to get some bigger bodies on the D-line, which then now all of a sudden you're changing against like an entire thing that you were excited about, that you were like one of the few things you have going well. And don't get me wrong, I don't disagree with Ogeron, but one of the things that's been going the most well is your pass rush and having, you know, two more of just true rushers on both edges and Anthony and Gay and, you know, this length and athleticism that isn't necessarily strong. And on the D-tackle spots, they've been playing a lot more Joseph Evans and Glenn Logan and less Apuaiko, who, by the way, he said that didn't play because he basically had a bad week of practice, which is, now that's another fascinating thing. And so, yeah. And that's one of the main things you got going well is that you have this attacking athletic pass rush, and now they're saying they might need to adjust and get some bigger bodies there. And I don't know what that's going to look like. Does it mean like Neil Farrell and Glenn Logan play some strong side D-end or something? I have no idea what that means. But
nah, Superman ain't coming through that door, dude. There ain't nothing you can do. There ain't nothing you can do in that regard. I mean, you just got
to
roll.
But he said they're going to start seeing some bigger bodies. Like, he said that confidently. Like, we are going to play bigger bodies up front now.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
I mean, I don't know how you get much bigger than Ollie Gay. The guy's a freaking giant. But he struggled in run defense.
No, yeah, he did.
He was quite poor. So I will say this for the D-line. What does make everything look worse is in a 4-3, it is a single-gap scheme as opposed to two-gapping, right? So these D-linemen essentially have one gap they have to worry about. When you have linebackers that aren't filling the leftover gaps like they're supposed to and are playing passive and leaving these cutback lanes open, it makes everything look worse. Now, don't get me wrong. The D-line did nothing.
Yeah.
Like, nobody, like, made a play. Like, they did nothing. It's just that, you know, everything was made to look that much worse by the linebacker players, or really the entire front seven, which, you know what matters the most in a 4-3? The entire front seven. And they just got dominated all night long. And it's kind of crazy when you get run on like that and then you don't have Apu Aika in there, who conceivably is your best run defender.
Yeah. And so now I want to ask you this. I mean, it's a big question. It's three games. And, like, you know me, I'm like the least, like, reactionary, I think, sports person I know. But where do you go from here? Are you already at the point where, like, boosters are getting together, which, by the way, I think to some extent they are, and talking about your exit strategy from this? Like, where are you at in that sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, it's something that you legitimately have to talk about. Now, you don't make a decision during the season. I guess unless things – I mean, but then again, I would have said that this was never even a realistic conversation 3 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
So – I guess things could get catastrophically worse. Like, if you're going to, if you're staring down the barrel of like 1-9 or 2-8, which I don't believe will happen, but as we sit now, we can no longer just pretend that it won't. Like, there's no game left in the schedule that you see as a for sure win when you look at how LSU is playing.
Nope, literally none. Arkansas is no longer a pushover. Yeah.
I know. Felipe Franks over 304 scores. They got cheated.
It is, like, conceivable. I'm not saying it. I have no way predicting this, but, like, 1-9 is technically conceivable. It is technically on the table. And
we'll go into a little schedule expectation, because I do think that's a terrible, terrifying, fascinating conversation. So if you get to that territory, then maybe it is a midseason firing.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I think you suck it up for this year, and then you've just got to have some real uncomfortable conversations afterwards. And here's the deal, is you have to hold yourself to the same standard that you have held yourself to in the past. It was very hard to fire Matt Canada. You made that decision believing in it, believing it was the best thing. I think that same exact conversation is going to have to take place.
This is about twice the money.
Here's your $2.3 million coordinator that has quite literally cost you two games against horrible teams. And it shows no signs of getting better, but, like, it's so hard to be worse that I think it will get better. But I just don't know how it could get good enough to justify bringing back that price tag. And what's the wildest part about this is that is even with the $6.9 million buyout and the fact that LSU's losing millions upon millions of dollars in revenue this year. I still think you have to legitimately have that conversation by season's end. There's just no other. I mean, there is just no other way about it. And it's tough. And Ogeron's done. He's taking his licks on this, and he knows it, and he acknowledged it today, that quote before the season started, right, about the defense being light years ahead. And the problem with that is that shows a coach that was maybe thinking a bit more emotionally than he was analytically. He wasn't necessarily saying – and granted, sure, I'm sure they looked better at practice. But he still was not saying what I think – his truest of hearts would tell him to be true. He was saying what he wanted to be true.
I believe that, yeah.
And that much is obvious, because it's just not – I mean, that is a quote that just seems like the height of absurdity here 3 weeks in. And what sucks is we should be talking about a team that actually – carried through a lot of its offensive success.
Yeah.
And even though it's still got major things to fix, like, there's so much potential in this offense and in the receiving core and in the quarterback play. And instead, we're bogged down in this just menial conversation about a defensive coordinator and whether or not he needs to be paid $7 million not to work. Which, if you're Pelini, why would I want to get better? I'm entering tank mode. It's probably so awkward around that building. Like, I mean, can I really bring this back? Like, if I just go and get fired, then I get paid $7 million not to work. Like, hell yeah.
Living the dream. Go get a job as like an NFL assistant somewhere. I don't know. And I'm sorry. I'm trying to phrase what I'm trying to say. Like, wow, I just lost my train of thought completely. I'm so sorry.
It's gotten to the point where we had, so, you know, there's the for cause clause in the contract, right? And in the chat today, we had people suggesting like ways that you could get Bo Pelini for cause so you didn't have to give him the buyout.
And it's not impossible that things bounce back. You have to start there. I mean, I was talking to somebody from Nebraska today who was criticizing Pelini quite a bit. But he was like, the thing with Bo is he's smart. Like when he gets it right, he gets it so right. He like embarrasses somebody and dominates it. But when he's wrong, he can't pivot. He refuses to admit he's wrong. And now you have to worry that he's just like out of the loop on what modern football is. But you do look forward to the schedule. I know we're not getting there yet, but you can lose every single one of those games. But you just need to be okay is what we're getting to. And I'm not saying I believe this offense entirely yet.
Yeah, be below average. And the offense isn't going to like – They're not the best, and ultimately they will lose shootouts because they're not quite efficient enough.
But they're getting better each week.
Better, and you still would have won these first three games had you just been below average.
But and yeah, so we'll wait and see what they do against, you know, the offenses against, say, a Florida or an Auburn, for example. But point is, the offense is at least as good as you think it is right now, and that's while being forced to just be in these shootouts because of these defensive games. If the defense can get to below average, or with the talent level you have, which, by the way, I still believe is pretty damn high, if you can get this talent level to even be okay, then yeah, I think this team can still win a lot of football games. You are still more talented than most teams you play on this schedule. It's just the point of how, you know, it's, you tweeted out your favorite thing, the sunk cost fallacy and all that, and it's like, is it possible that each week that he's in charge, it's actually like making it worse, and that it's actually making things go further behind, and a linebacker is losing progression and all these things? Those are things you really have to worry about, because these guys that we're talking about, Damone Clark and Jabril Cox, for example, two guys who got highlighted the most for their bad game Saturday, those are guys that I would actually argue are two of the four players on that defense that they were most excited about, literally even just days within the season. They were like, these are our guys. These are our superstars. These are first-round picks, all these things. And if they look this bad and this confused and all of the things you're saying about how timid they look, which I agree with, you have to just say, our coach might actually be making our players worse.
I mean, he's costing Jabril Cox money a lot of it, yeah. Right now.
Yeah.
And the reason why this Missouri game to me is so much more terrifying than the Mississippi State game was that although I saw busted coverages in the Mississippi State game, that just looked like a terrible scheme.
Yeah.
That there were explanations. Guys were just getting beat. Yeah. Like they were losing the one-on-ones. Yes, there were explanations. That is well said. This is inexplicable. Yeah. Or at least it's only explicable by nobody knowing what the hell's going on, which is directly at the coach's fault. So, I mean, look, I'm with you, though. Like, and with exactly the plan in action, we talked about this morning, and then O talked about it at the presser, like, just simplify everything. Nothing can go worse. Like, if you just run a base defense, and even if you're not in the position to do this or that, or somebody takes advantage of it, it still, on the whole, will be so much better than this kind of exact chess positioning that you're trying to accomplish right now.
And if this offense is any good, then having a bend, don't break defense is going to win you a lot of games. That's if, but
Yes. And the I mean, I don't think I have anything else to say on the defense.
Well, there's just one conversation I guess you have to have. And I say this as somebody who still, like, it's not like Ed Orgeron is in any trouble. Ed Orgeron just won Coach of the Year, National Championship. Like, he's got a long leash and he deserves to, and I still think very highly of him as a head coach. So, like, don't take this as, like, bashing. But it is kind of funny how, like, two hires can change things both ways, right? Because I'd say going into 2019, it was like Orgeron's hiring was his most criticized thing, right? Like, it was like Ed Orgeron has not had a great track record of hiring coaches. And then all of a sudden after 2019, it's like, wow, we hired Joe Brady. What an incredible hire. Ensminger looks good now. Bill Bush is one he gets credit for. And even that's one I'd actually say is a Dave Aranda hire more than an O hire. But still, you know, and he was in James Craig. He deserves a ton of credit for the James Craig hire, all these things. And then all of a sudden, another two hires, it all looks very different. Because then all of a sudden, you're like, well, now you got Matt Canada. You got You got Bo Pelini, Scott Linehan hire, which I actually have some explanations for that, but I don't think that hire looks very good right now, especially.
Right now, I think why the Linehan hire doesn't look good is what was Joe Brady directly responsible for? Third down and exactly, red zone, yes. Right? So we assume that that's Linehan as well, and that has been the offense's two biggest areas.
Exactly. So, and I do want to get to that in a second. I have some thoughts on that, but still. So all of a sudden, you're like, now it's funny how it can change so quickly, because now you're looking at those three hires that, again, we still need some time, but there's a chance those three hires are just like train wreck hires, and all of a sudden, you know, you're like, and it can go either way, and that's gonna hurt him, by the way, the next time he has to make a DC hire. That's gonna hurt him, and it's gonna hurt him in a lot of things. It's gonna hurt him in recruiting, by the way. They were like heavy favorites for Corey Foreman and Mason Smith. They were like at a point where it really looked like they were about to get 2 5-star defensive linemen. I'm no clue, I'm not plugged in on that. They could still get him down the road, who knows, but that momentum definitely,
but it's almost like you have to fire Pelini to keep
You just lost that insane momentum, like, you had. So anyway, that was just my only thing of like,
this is in my notes. What you're touching on, it's right here. I talked about it this morning. I wrote this up. Bo Pelini and his defense right now are a ballast around Ogeron's neck. They're dragging him down. And here's a headline from Ralph Russo's AP Top 25 Takeaways that he does every week. This is the headline. Quote, Ogeron's star turn could be short-lived. He then opens with Ogeron talking about how the defense was better than it was at any point last year. Talking about the quote, and this is how he ends it. LSU had a once-in-a-lifetime season, and then the band basically broke up, leaving Ogeron behind to prove if he could be more than a one-hit wonder. His first big move was to bring in Pelini. His defense has given up more points through 3 games than any in LSU history. A year after beating Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney on the way to a national championship, Ogeron is conjuring up memories of a far less successful season at LSU. Heading to Florida next week to face the potent Gator offense, the Tigers are 1-2 for the first time since 1994, Curly Hallman's last season as a coach. And this is obviously tagged right along with LSU dropping out of the AP Top 25. So you're right. I mean, it could get bad enough where maybe some sort of, it's almost like a panic, like freeze the stock, you know, the price is in free fall. Like, we have to make some very clear public changes to get investors to kind of calm down.
Investors,
and everybody stop selling
it.
And stop panicking.
No, and you're right.
And so maybe it has to get there. I don't know.
And here's the thing. Like I said, I mean, everyone deserves the chance to make bad hires. Like, Nick Saban made some pretty bad hires in like 2018, 2019, you know, like everyone has those things, but it's the fact that, you know, it's one of our favorite things to discuss after the championship and this whole spring was this idea of, like, now we really, and I'm not taking away credit for 2019. Ogeron deserves so much credit. But our thing was, this is where we really find out what Ed Ogeron is. This is where, like, he has all the power. He can do whatever he wants. He can be, build the program perfectly in his image. And all of the moves that he made that were, this is my image, so far are going really, really poorly. And that's the part that has to scare you. And I'm not saying it's over, but it's scary.
So we're going to acknowledge the bad. Let's also acknowledge the good, because there is a little bit of negative confirmation bias going on where people are ignoring all the good moves and only highlighting the bad. Even the 10-3 season that you kind of pulled out of your ass, Ogeron was the architect.
Oh, that was his best coaching
job. Yeah, of the key additions that made that come about, right? And deciding to go from Canada to Ensminger, which had to be incredibly tough to do, even though it looks like he's going to have to do that once again. So he was the architect of 10-3, obviously the architect of 15-0 when you look at the key moves there. So, like, and then you look at recruiting overall right now, the future, in my opinion, still looks very bright. But he's going to have to engage in what, you know, it seems like was really the thing that helped him turn around his entire career, which is that self-evaluation, that raw, honest self-evaluation about, is this situation tenable? Can we actually make this work? And if we cannot, how do I convince my base to pay $6.9 million for this guy not to work after they basically hired him on my recommendation alone?
Yeah. And all right, so are we good with basically what we – well, actually, no, it's connected, because now I want to get to Scott Linehan. And Scott Linehan, obviously, they just had Joe Brady, and we've been on this whole thing about how, you know, all of a sudden, like, our definition of the passing game coordinator is so much, like, higher scale than it ever used to be, when actually it's just like the number two to the OC. So it's a little unfair, but still, Scott Linehan also is being criticized quite a bit right now, and some of it's rightfully so. You know, they're 53rd in the country on third down percentage, I believe. They are.
And that was something that we highlighted even last week, because remember, they did a much better job of getting to third and manageable against Vanderbilt. They had a third and six third down average, and yet they still did not convert at a very good rate.
Oh, by the way, actually, so they're 74th.
Problem again, but they're just.
I said 53rd. They're actually 74th in third down success.
I was about to say 53. Man, the country must be horrible.
they're 19.2%. So, but here's something I did want to point out after rewatching this game, and I'm curious if you just completely disagree, which will be fine. But, you know, I went back and I watched all the third downs and all the drives, really, that stalled. And, you know, 0 for 10 on third down is terrible, no matter how you look at it. There's no scenario where that's okay. But something interesting did kind of happen, and I started noticing it right around they started stalling, you know, like late second quarter, early third. I understood, okay, they weren't running the ball, and I actually understood why. I mean, it's still a bad look when Missouri was without three defensive linemen, and, you know, you should be able to just run the ball against a worse team. So, still not a great play calling. But the passing game was open, right? And it did succeed most of the game. And
the drop off, the O-line blocked terribly.
Yes.
Like the drop off from Ed Ingram to Charles Turner. And that's no disrespect to Turner, because just how good Ingram is compared to Turner's first start. It's just it's like driving directly off the Grand Canyon.
And so as I went back and watched, you started seeing on a lot of those drives that became a third and long, which was the real problem. The problem was, it's not that they were terrible on third down, it's that they put themselves in such long third down distances. I think the average was 9.6 or something. But you started seeing, okay, there was the first down where they drew up a perfect screen where John Emery should have had 15 yards and he drops it. Or there's the first down where Torrey Carter actually gets a wide open about 8 yard completion and it goes right off his hands. And, you know, you started seeing or a third down where he puts a pretty nice ball in Terrace Marshall's spot, but it gets broken up. You know, it became this thing where I'm not sure I'm like ready to be like they were terrible on third down, or if anything, it became like just a bizarre amount of drops and missed out. And some were bad Brennan throws too, just a bizarre amount of like mess ups on first and second down, put them in terrible third downs. And I know that sounds like I'm doing some twisted, you know, like spin zoning, but I'm just saying, I'm not ready to say third down was terrible, terrible.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Well, no, so I think both are true. I think that you are correct, and I'll point out a sequence that just perfectly highlights what you're just talking about. You are correct in that ultimately a lot of times you pay for the sins that you make on first and second down. You know, payment time is on third down, and LSU without a doubt ran into that, but still, just overall on the season, they're just not good at third down. Like, and you're right, it's this weird whose turn is it now type of deal, where it's like a drop pass, this throws a little errant, oh, they missed the protection there. Like, it's just a different position group seemingly every time. But let's look at the last third and 18. So this is where you had a three-point lead and you are trying to drive to obviously extend that lead. So you get to 3rd and 18. How did you get there? On 1st and 10, you had the dropped touchdown by Torrey Carter, which was an unbelievable throw in between three guys right there. And people are like, why are you throwing to Torrey Carter? I want the quarterback to make the correct decision. And that was the right read, and it should have been a touchdown.
Agreed.
Now, if you want to say the coaches should put in a personnel that doesn't have Torrey Carter in there, because obviously he's just a two tight end, and they're still running their stuff, and so they just put him in because Gilbert was out, that's all well and good. But you cannot blame the quarterback for that. He needs to make the – Drew Brees throws to Dan Arnold for a reason, right? It's because you have to make the read no matter what. So 1st and 10, you're set up by the drop touchdown. So then all of a sudden you're behind the chains. Then on 2nd and 10, you get a little pressure. Brendan tries to scramble. Instead of throwing it away, he tries to run. He gets tripped up. 3-yard loss. So all of a sudden, you're now in 3rd and 13. Then there's a delay of game penalty. Yeah. That makes it even worse. You're now in 3rd and 18. Then on the 3rd and 18, you allow a free rusher up the middle. It looked like a misidentified Mike call to me, causing the O-line's responsibilities to be off. Free blitzer up the middle. Brennan gets hit. You obviously don't get the first down. Now you're in an extra long field goal. And then Cade York, who's been excellent, trying to get a little extra oomph, line drives it, blocked kick, and the rest is history. So, I mean, that sequence does highlight a lot of what went wrong at the end of the game when LSU started to stall. You're right. It was the failures on 1st and 2nd down a lot of times.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You want to hear a wild stat that might tell me I'm, like, incredibly wrong? I just found it while you were talking because I wanted to double-check myself. They actually have the 20th best average third down distance in the country, which is mind-blowing. But I don't – so, yeah.
They were really good against Vanderbilt. 20 still seems high, but
– yeah, I mean, look, that's so just an aside. Go on.
No, but I mean, I have the down and distances right here, and they got long at the end, but they weren't at first.
No, the first half they were short.
Third and 2, third and 4, third and 5. I missed one of them in the third quarter. I thought it was tight when they went for it on 4th and 5 early on and got it.
Which that was, in my mind, that counts. Yeah,
that was cool.
it does. It should. It's the same thing.
No, that was actually a great sequence because on 3rd and 13, you got yourself to a manageable, okay, let's go for it 4th down. Yeah, you got 8. So
okay, we're pretty far in here, so I think it's time to just talk, like, what do we think happens the rest of the season? And we can make it relatively quick.
Well, hold on. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about offensively? Because I just got a couple more.
Yeah, I'd love – well, I mean, I'll say the one clear thing, which is Miles Brennan. It's the same thing we talked about last week. He has gotten better every single week. His deep ball looks so much better. He looks more comfortable. By the way, Missouri was getting pressure, so it's not like he had clean pockets like the Vanderbilt game, and he was stepping into throws. He officially, to me, looks like a solid SEC quarterback. What? But what's the one thing I've said all year, every single week after his worst game and after his best games, I am not making a strong decision on Miles Brennan until the Florida game. And I know it's not a good Florida defense, but still, it's Florida. It's talent level. It's different. So,
and it's going to be full stadium probably on the road.
Yes. Yeah, good point. So, but I'm very impressed with how he's gotten better because, like we said, that is one of those things you always hear people like, oh, he's going to get better. But that is really hard to actually get better every week. And he is. So credit where it's due. They look pretty good.
Yeah, his trajectory speaks to him being very good. Now, obviously, see, this is what sucks is he should have been able to build up a little cushion in these first three games to make mistakes in the bigger ones. But now he's going to be held to an even more impossibly That's high standard. And I do think the just because of the rise in competition, I do think his play will actually take a step back.
Of course, yeah.
It's just that I still love his overall potential. I mean, the first touchdown throw was dropped in the beautiful touch in the back corner to Marshall.
Yep.
The second touchdown throw, another beautiful touch in the crossing route where he's hit as he throws. He gets a little scramble to extend just enough. I like on the third touch, I'm not anything that Miles did necessarily, but I like their formation where they go trips right, Arik Gilbert alone on the left.
Yeah.
If he gets man, just trust him to body him up. And then the 75-yard touchdown was just like...
It was great.
You know, as perfectly thrown on a rope of a deep ball.
And you leave this game... As you could have had. You leave this game really confident that he actually has a good connection with both Marshall and Arik Gilbert, which is very important.
Yeah. Wait, so how about... what do you think about Miles... Instead of running out of bounds, when he like clearly could have gone out of bounds, you could see the wheels turn in his head. He made a conscious decision, like, no, I've got to turn this thing up. And he plants his foot and tries to run over the linebacker, only to get lit.
So that is something that, like, everyone kept telling me is, like, everyone thinks, like, Miles is, like, this skinny kid. But it's, like, Miles wants to hit somebody. Like, we've talked about on this show. Like, I've heard stories of him in the fourth quarter program or in high school. Or I remember last year, and I think it was the Utah State game, he actually ran a 12-yard run up the middle and like refused to slide and went at the linebacker. So not a very smart move, but it is, I guess, like a, let's not forget Joe Burrow like won most of his points with the fan base in 2019 by taking hits and like liking hitting people. The difference is Joe Burrow still kind of went forward on those hits, but hey, whatever.
And I mean, also,
he won the
you had a little bit of a better insurance policy with Miles as a backup compared to two freshmen. So, like, you maybe want to be a little more careful.
I love everybody on Twitter.
What did you hear?
I'm sorry. I just want to say, everyone was like, man, you see, you hurt the linebacker. Everyone was like, Miles Brenner hurt this guy. No, he didn't. It was the guy who went over him. It wasn't the guy he hit. Yeah. The other guy went over him and it got hurt.
Yeah.
All right, just had to say that.
He did not hurt the linebacker. did you hear Coach O talk about that during the press conference today?
No.
He said that it was like one of his favorite things that he's seen on tape from Miles.
Okay, I must have missed that.
That he was saying that, you know, the they were always kind of wondering, you know, O said, you know, I thought he could take the big shot and bounce right back, but I didn't know it. It had to be proven. And for O, it sounded like that was like a big time kind of prove it moment for him when he saw Miles take that shot and then get right back up. So
yeah,
it's funny how much that little stuff can kind of matter. Yeah, exactly.
The second half, Miles was definitely hurt and looked solid. So, yeah, I'll give him credit. And I do think how good his connection looks with, you know, we knew it would be solid with Marshall, how good it looked with Gilbert. They just looked like they genuinely had a good thing going. So that's promising because that.
And Terrace Marshall's incredible. I hate that his performance is just lost in all this because he was unbelievable.
I mean, our Dane Brugler.
If only he had managed to stretch that ball out, dude. If only he managed to stretch that ball out at the end.
Yeah,
he was so close.
Dane Brugler, I believe, the Athletic, our draft analyst, I believe he tweeted Saturday, like, is LSU going to have two top five receivers this year? Which, I mean, like, Marshall's are earning first round buzz, but yeah, that's all I got on the offense.
I mean, what if Jamar Chase is on this team? I mean, I can't do that to my brain, but my god,
yeah,
it'd be incredible. Okay, last thing I want to talk about, the goal line play sequence.
Oh, yeah,
from the one.
It's funny, I just don't have that many thoughts there. I just don't, but I want to hear, yours.
Yeah. Here's my biggest issue with it, is that in the two runs in the first three calls, which are two runs in a very quick, like, quick design throw, right, where you're only going one place with the throw. My issue with that is you really only gave Brennan one chance to win you the game. Like, on a day in which he did everything for you, including driving you down there to be in that position, you really only put the ball in his hand on one play. And granted, on that fourth down play, he had Kirkland on the backside. He was locked in a Marshall. I don't know if I can blame him for being locked in a Marshall at this point, but Kirkland would have been open on the backside. But, like, I would have liked to have seen you give him at least two chances.
Yeah.
And then I guess my only other thought is I hate LSU's quick back-to-back zone runs. Not because they're run calls. I just – because that sequence has become predictable out of them.
Yeah.
They've done it for 2 years straight now in every short yarded situation. I would have loved some sort of play action, like do the thing that you always do, but mix it up with like a jump pass or something. Like, there's so many different ways that you could have handled that. So I was like, as soon as you saw them lining up real quick on second down, you knew exactly what was coming. And lo and behold, that was it.
And
so that's my main
thing.
No,
and there's something.
It's just that you only gave Brennan one.
There is something interesting to point out there is that after the state game, I had somebody specifically to go out of their way to tell me that they had fixed that, because that was the one thing's week one is they were mad that like those run plays, like Miles didn't have the option to pull it at the goal line. And someone said, we specifically went in to fix that, so now Miles does have that option to pull it, and it didn't look like he did. So that is just something to keep an eye on.
He definitely – that was a street zone at the end. Yeah. I don't think he ever would have pulled that at the end. And then the other thing is, though, I mean, everybody knows you're just lining up and running zone again. And you've been terrible – like, you've been terrible run blocking all day long. I know you want to think you should be able to get a yard, but the game had proven that you could not get a yard at will. Ed Ingram was sorely missed. Okay, so that's the offense. It's the defense. It's a 1-2 LSU team that looks like it's in very rough shape. Now, Brody, let's talk about where things go from here. Go to theathletic.com, sign up for theathletic.com/holdthatpodcast, sign up for the deal. And then after you do that, go look at the LSU schedule. And when you look at the games remaining, let me pull mine up real quick. So you have Florida this week, South Carolina, Auburn, Alabama, Arkansas, Texas A&M, and Ole Miss. I'll tell you where my head's at. I will still give you the benefit of the doubt on South Carolina and Arkansas, which I shouldn't, but I will.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say you win those two. Yep. I'm going to say you lose to Florida and Alabama, mm-hmm. and then you have three question marks in Auburn, A&M, and Ole Miss. Why that's terrifying is before you factor in three question marks, if those games play out with the two wins and two losses, like we said, you're at 3-4. You are 3-4 feeling like you most likely end at 4-6. I would have never thought that was even in the cards when they came out with the new SEC schedule. We talked how LSU was the big winner and they added Mizzou and Vandy. It is unthinkable that that's where we have arrived.
Wait, where are you getting 3-4?
Because right now you're 1-2. And so I'm giving you wins over South Carolina and Arkansas, and I'm giving you losses against Florida and
Okay,
Alabama.
Gotcha. Well, that's the thing, though. What's scary is that, okay, you lose to Florida, let's say you beat South Carolina and you lose to Auburn, you're going into Bama 2-4. And then you're two and five.
Yeah.
So that's the really scary thing, because now you have this albatross hanging over it, where each game literally is a win-win. And just for context, Bill Connelly's ESPN numbers give LSU a 32% chance of 5-5, a 27% chance of 4-6, and a 19% chance of 6-4. So you are more likely to go 4-6 than 6-4 based on the analytics.
That makes sense to me.
Oh yeah,
I mean that definitely makes sense to me.
It gives him a
5-5 would be the success at this point.
Oh my god, yeah. And if you go 6-4 at that point, you're like, wow, hell of a turnaround, good coaching job, you know, like then we're gonna have to write like weird puff pieces, and that's gonna be a new thing.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
But I mean, yeah, I just, so okay, part of me does believe they still win one of the big four. I do. I think they find a way, because you are still that talented. You are still, you know, a team.
And Florida looks way more vulnerable than they did. Like, you know, theoretically, you could win a shootout there.
Florida looks vulnerable.
I don't think Alabama.
Auburn still looks really messy to me. And A&M.
Who knows what to make out of A&M? Although, I don't know what to make now. Have you seen this? Have you realized, just with how things have played out, A&M probably has the best path to the natty out of anyone?
How is that possible? Because they're already through their two toughest games, probably?
Because they're not going to have to worry about an SEC championship. They're through the two. They will be favored in every game, likely, from here on out.
I'm pulling
so
up.
So A&M
in a second.
Could
yeah.
make the argument that they're going to be 9-1, and then you're not going to not put a 9-1 team in the playoff.
Oh my god!
From the SEC, so A&M's actually in the catbird seat right now.
Wow. Well, the problem is
things change fast. It's take quakes 2020. They never stop. They keep coming. It's wild.
Yeah. But it is set up, though, where they're probably going to be going into their last two games, you know, something on the lines of, like, 7-1. And, wow, that's going to be fascinating. Okay, let's make our predictions, because I think my prediction, I still think you win one of those four. Well, I'm just going to say Auburn for the hell of it. So you're 2-3 going into – I think I go 5-5, which is the boring – most likely scenario, but I'm going to...
I go 5-5 as well, but, like, I actually feel like I'm being a bit of a homer with that.
Yeah.
Like, I really think that 4-6 feels like the most realistic.
If you're judging just off those first three games, yes, 4-6 is the correct answer.
Like,
yeah.
It's just, it's so tough for me to give the benefit of the doubt when that's what we did for this Mizzou game. And
touché.
Look at how badly it bit us.
Yeah, there's just that part of you that has to say, like, it can never be as bad as it just was, right?
Right? Like, this is such a rock-bottom moment. And if you look at how they responded to the last rock-bottom moment against Troy a couple of years ago, that ended up being the catalyst for tons of positive change. So it's like...
Wow, kind of funny.
Maybe that happens
both times
again,
Mississippi State was the pre-bottom. Both times, because in 2017, yeah. Mississippi State routed them, but it still wasn't bottom. Troy had to happen. This time it's Missouri.
Yeah, I feel like Ogeron's kind of like, you know, when he's not whipping everybody's ass, he's got a little bit of a Santa quality to him. He's just like hooking all these fan base up with tight wins. Like, Troy, you got
spin
one.
Zone.
Okay, Mullen, you needed one at the end. Leach, you need to kick this bandwagon off. Come on, dude. Drinkwitz? Fucking nerd. You probably won't win again this year. Come on, dude. Let's go. Like, let's ride. I mean, like,
he shook his hand after and he's like, you're welcome, my man. Like, I got you. You're good for a year, bro. I got you.
I mean, Christmas comes early this year when you play the LSU Tigers.
He's going to be like, you're going to have to pay me back next year, though. Yeah.
Lane Kiffin is looking at Bo Pelini like he's a delicious, like, just dinosaur that's ready to be put out to pasture and grilled up.
And that's the last game of the year.
I mean, Lane Kiffin has got to be licking his chops. After what I just saw the tempo and what Lane Kiffin just did to Nick Saban in that Alabama defense, I am terrified for Bo Pelini and LSU. Yeah,
me too. All right, so we're both at 5-5, and if it's 5-5, I don't think Bo Pelini is still the LSU defense coordinator in 2021.
No, cannot be. Cannot be. Also, the LSU's in a unique position where, depending on how this all plays out, I think and because of the Natty and everything, you will still be able to sell people on the overall vision that O is the man for the job, and he is, yeah. I believe. But whatever. But so the point being there is that, okay, anger can drive the checkbook as long as either the head man is being replaced or you still believe in the head man. Yeah. And so, like, they can still sell O as being the head man and then get people to donate to it. It's just so sad that you are going to have to, if it reaches that. It would be so terribly sad in 2020 when everybody's scrounging for money and everybody's getting hit, and including the athletic department itself, if you're out there gathering donations to pay a guy $7 million not to work. But that's how bad it potentially looks like it could get this year.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I just wonder how much, like, you know, hiring power O loses, you know? That's the other thing.
A ton. Yeah. I mean, you got to.
Like, I wonder how much is it 100% his say next time? I don't know.
No, I think Woodward gets to have a much bigger say in the process. And whatever,
that's,
man.
Fine.
I would welcome that if I was Ogeron. It's bad. It's bad. So this is the Hold That Podcast podcast. TheAthletic.com/HoldThatPodcast. $1 a month. If you do it now, do it. Get it. It's an Arnold joke, Brody.
Nailed it.
Thank you. And then listen to Football Grits, SEC podcast on The Athletic. I was on there last week with John, and we were picking games, and I think every one of my predictions went horribly awry. Get your meats at Aber Special Meats on the Bocage location. Brody, anything to say on the way out
here? I think we've said it all, my man.
Yeah, I believe so, too. All right, everybody, keep the faith. It's, you know, these are the fun seasons. We can actually talk about things that need to be improved upon instead of just masturbatory celebrations week in and week out. Adversity is what molds us. So share this with all of your friends, or we're kicking you out of the club. Share it, rate it, review it. That all helps us. We'll see you next week on the Hold That Podcast. Thank you.